KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The first few weeks of the new presidential administration have been tumultuous and caused chaos for Indian country. But tribes will stand firm and demonstrate the resilience they always have. That's the message from National Congress of American Indians President Mark Macaro this morning at the annual State of Indian Nations Address in Washington, D.C. He talked about a strategy to work with the Trump administration and the need for equitable funding for tribes. We'll hear excerpts from his speech and get reactions right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Investigators are still determining what caused a plane crash near Nome, Alaska on Thursday that killed all 10 people on board. Over the weekend, crews retrieved pieces of the wreckage from an ice floe. As KNOM's Ben Townsend reports, Alaskans joined together to mourn the lives lost in one of the state's deadliest plane crashes in recent decades.
Crews had to act fast over the weekend to get to the crash site before a storm closed in on the region. The Coast Guard says the Cessna Caravan, which was traveling from Unalakleet, crashed on an ice floe 34 miles from Nome, killing the pilot and all 9 passengers on board. Nome Volunteer Fire Department Chief Jim West Jr. says he stressed over who to send to assist in the recovery because several of the first responders knew the victims.
The number of bodies out there or casualties, things like that affects people differently. Do we sacrifice ourselves for the younger crew that's coming up? I mean, we've been through it, we've seen it, we've dealt with it. They haven't.
Crews were able to retrieve the bodies of all 10 victims before freezing rain and high winds hit. Helicopters were seen bringing pieces of the plane back to Nome throughout the afternoon Saturday. National Transportation Safety Board Chair Jennifer Homendy said it's too early to speculate on the cause of the crash. NTSB officials will travel to Nome to inspect the plane parts. At a vigil Saturday night, Unalakleet resident Tony Haugen reflected on the impact of the crash.
When the region has something that occurs like this here, it doesn't only affect one community. I mean, we feel the pain region-wide.
Troopers have named the 10 victims, who range in age from 30 to 58. 2 were from Nome, including the pilot. 2 were from Unalakleet, and 6 were from South Central Alaska. In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
The state of Indian Nations is strong and on the rise, says National Congress of American Indians President Mark Macaro. He delivered the annual Indian Nations address Monday to tribal leaders who are gathered in Washington, D.C. Macaro says the first few weeks of the new presidential administration has been tumultuous, but says Indian country has the tools to work together, and leaders need to focus on defending tribal rights.
I strongly affirm it's time to speak up. It's time to stand up. Tribal leadership must hold the federal government accountable to these commitments. That's why we are here.
Tribal leaders are attending NCAI's legislative winter session, which wraps up on Thursday. Singer Buffy St. Marie has been stripped of the Order of Canada. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it comes a year after a CBC investigation that found her claims of Indigenous ancestry were not consistent with public documents.
The Order of Canada is an award that recognizes people who have made a significant contribution to the country. It's presented by the Governor General of Canada. In its more than 50-year history, only 8 people have been expelled from the order. Buffy St. Marie becomes the 9th. Her award was terminated nearly 30 years after she was appointed in 1997. The investigation found that St. Marie's birth certificate shows that she was born in Massachusetts in 1941, of white parents, and that was witnessed by an attending physician. That's also reaffirmed by a marriage certificate, the U.S. Census, and a life insurance policy. St. Marie has faced these accusations before, but said in the past that she did not misrepresent herself.
I'm an artist, an activist, a mom, a survivor, and a proud member of the Native community with deep roots in Canada.
She also claimed the documentary was full of mistakes and omissions. In a written statement, she said being an Indian has little to do with sperm tracking and colonial record keeping. It has to do with community, culture, knowledge, teachings, and your family. The Governor General's office says it does not comment on the specifics of termination cases. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show. Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fmbalaska.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. National Congress of American Indians President Mark Macaro laid out a strategy for working with the federal government after what he called a tumultuous start to the new administration. In his annual State of Indian Nations address, Macaro states he wouldn't say that he would not use the word hope to describe the current political climate, but he says he wouldn't use the word despair either. Macaro emphasized the need for equitable funding and policies when it comes to health care, education, and justice for Indian country. We're going to hear from that speech today, and we'll get reactions to his message. You can join us by calling 1-800-996-2848. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go now to Mark Macaro speaking earlier today from Washington, D.C.
We thank the one who is above for bringing us safely together, and we thank and honor our elders, our living connection to the time before us. I stood before you last year and said, I believe this is a moment for hope in Indian country. So I look back and marvel at how many hopeful things happened in 2024. At last year's speech, we were excited that Lily Gladstone had become the first Native woman to be nominated for Best Actress at the Oscars. Lily didn't win, but a few months later, she became the executive director of a documentary called Sugar Cane. That movie beautifully and painfully documents the systemic abuse of Indigenous children at residential schools. Now, a few weeks ago, Julian Brave Noisecat became the first Native American to be nominated for an Oscar for Best Directing for Sugar Cane. So, right? Absolutely. We still have many firsts to go. So, Lily made history last year and then joined a project that made more history this year. If that's not hopeful, what is? I also felt hope when President Biden made a historic apology for the federal government's role in Indian boarding schools. More work is certainly needed on that, but what an important first step. And I believe that apology happened because President Biden had a Native woman in his cabinet. For 4 years, Indian Country's own Deb Haaland was at the center of so much. The Interior Department that she led signed more than 400 co-stewardship agreements with tribes, an incredible accomplishment. These agreements will protect sacred sites and preserve ecosystems. But most importantly, they honor Indigenous knowledge by bringing the tribal nations into the management of these places. There's so much more, and we are grateful for all of your work, Secretary Haaland. And finally, more than 250 Native candidates ran for political office in 2024. A historic 166 of them won, and 115 of them are first-time office holders, meaning we are building a bench and bringing our lived experiences to the halls of power. So, right? Absolutely. So as I consider this year, I'm not sure hope is the word I'd use, and yet I wouldn't use the word despair. It's been a tumultuous first few weeks of a new administration, but Indian Country continues to have both the acumen and the tools it needs to push back where needed and to protect each other where needed. I also wouldn't use the word despair because in 8 short days, Leonard Peltier will come home. Right? In Congress, they say this phrase. Point of personal privilege here. My wife, Holly, who was here, did so much work to get these past few years. She did so much work in these past few years to get Leonard home. Nick Tilson and she spent a lot of time with a great team those last few weeks before the news came to us on January 20th. I mention Holly because I saw firsthand how hard she worked and how hard she worked with others to make this happen. And when I take a step back, I think of the generations of people who have worked for nearly 50 years to get Leonard home. Leonard's story includes traumatic reminders of the barriers that Indian Country continues to face. It's also the latest example of what we mean when we talk about working with future generations in mind. Now, many who have worked on behalf of Leonard have walked on, but they did so believing that their work would ultimately pay off. And I know they're with us here still today. So I look at our Native youth using their voices in this moment and working to secure the future we envision for Indian Country. And what we just heard is a perfect example of that. The state of Indian Nations is strong because we have our women holding us up. And what we heard today was incredible. So I thank our Native youth for presenting the message they carried today. You know, they tell us things that we need to hear. That Gen Z, as a boomer, I say this, that generation, they look at the world differently, they see things and interpret things differently than certainly we do. Certainly me, I'll say that for myself. And so they present us with challenges, and we need to, in good faith, meet those challenges. I'm grateful for them and for our Native veterans whose duty, service, and sacrifice have served to bring honor to and protect the well-being of our people and of our ancestral lands. Last year, I also said the state of Indian Nations is strong and on the rise. And I still firmly believe that because as the people of Indian Country are strong, so too are our tribal nations. There are warriors among us. Right here, we have what we need. So sovereignty is what this is about. But we must not ignore the gathering clouds we've seen in the past few weeks. The new administration has unleashed a torrent of actions that have caused confusion and chaos. I feel this approach was deliberate in its attempt to disrupt and destabilize. But don't focus on the disruption and the destabilization. Focus on what we need to do. We've seen members of tribal nations detained by immigration agencies in recent weeks. That is a rich image, right? Considering that we quite literally were here first, but that doesn't negate how painful it still is. When Congress or the administration are making decisions, they must do so knowing the unique obligations that they have toward tribal nations as sovereign political entities. We have a legal status as a political class rather than a racial class, something our highest courts have consistently recognized and upheld. Misclassifying this government's obligations to our tribal nations as diversity, equity, inclusion, or environmental justice, all these initiatives in this way disrespects our status and jeopardizes critical funding and progress. And undermining this trust relationship would reverse more than 50 years of trust built through the Indian self-determination and self-governance eras of federal Indian law and policy. So it's our job here at NCAI to both educate and remind these leaders of this important status that we have. We're already facing several challenges from the new administration. The freeze in federal funding caused panic throughout Indian Country and beyond. That freeze didn't end up happening because OMB issued a memo rescinding the freeze, but still many tribal government funding portals were closed. Native Americans still lag far behind the nation as a whole in virtually all key indicators of healthy communities. Yet, as we gather here today, we don't firmly know about the security of federal funding for tribal programs that might address those gaps. This is not acceptable. Indian Country has always been linked most linked to the work of Department of Interior. And an order from the Interior discussed how to eliminate DEI and environmental justice initiatives there. In this case, that order also explicitly stated an exemption. And this was, I think, a little circulated, so I'm restating it here. It stated explicitly that the statutory, treaty, and trust obligations of the department regarding tribal nations remain intact and unaffected. That's very important verbiage. This order at the Department of Interior affirms the continued legal recognition of our treaties, which are foundational to the government-to-government relationship between the United States and tribal nations. Now, this order needs to serve as a standard throughout the administration, and we hope to see similar orders across all departments and agencies. So it's imperative to remind all policymakers that these obligations are not optional. They are legally binding commitments that have been in place for generations now. This theme is exactly what Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska also noted in a letter that she wrote to the White House Office of Management and Budget just last week. As chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, Senator Murkowski is calling on the administration to issue a directive that reaffirms tribal programs are not subject to orders targeting DEI and environmental justice initiatives. I'm grateful to Senator Murkowski for her work in demanding that programs that are grounded in the political and legal status of tribal nations never be misclassified as expendable. But Senator Murkowski can't do it alone. This moment demands vigilance from all of us.
You are listening to the annual State of Indian Nations Address from NCI President Mark Macaro. He spoke earlier today at the NCAI Executive Council Winter Session. We'll also hear the congressional response a little later from Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum. This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and I encourage all of our listeners today, if you are inspired, call into the show, share your comments, share your thoughts. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That'll connect you with our studio. And if you would like to share your insights, any thoughts you have with regard to President Mark Macaro's address earlier today in Washington, D.C., or maybe in the past you've been present at one of these State of Indian Nations address, give us a call. Let us know what you thought of that event, what it's like being there in person when you have this address taking place live. You can do that. Just give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Share your comments on the air. We're going to take a short break, and we will continue with more of President Macaro and the State of Indian Nations Address. Aquinnah Wampanoag artist Julia Martin is a master of her tribe's traditional twining, a form of weaving for baskets, regalia, and dolls. She's also one of this year's winners of the Community Spirit Awards from the First Peoples Fund. We'll hear from her and other awardees on the next Native America Calling.
Repatriation is the return of ancestors and stolen culture. The Association on American Indian Affairs and the Tunica-Biloxi Tribe will host the 10th Annual Repatriation Conference February 25th, 26th, and 27th, 2025 in Marksville, Louisiana. The conference will provide expert hands-on training about domestic and international repatriation. Registration and more information available at indian-affairs.org. The Association on American Indian Affairs supports this show.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We are hearing the State of Indian Nations from National Congress of American Indians President Mark Macaro. We've heard him appeal to tribes to resist efforts to freeze funding that violates the federal government's trust responsibility. Macaro delivered the address earlier today. Now let's hear more from Macaro's address. In this next segment, he establishes NCAI as a unifying voice to protect tribal interests.
I know tribal communities are debating how to respond to the actions of the new administration. Well, I strongly affirm it's time to speak up. It's time to stand up. Tribal leadership must hold the federal government accountable to these commitments. That's why we are here. Those of you who are elected officials of your tribes, that's why you're here. That's why we're here to do this business. We're here in this moment for this. We must call our partners in Congress, in federal agencies, and across Indian country to stand united in defense of our rights. Programs that support education, healthcare, economic development, and environmental protection aren't just nice to haves. They are lifelines for our communities. And we as tribal leaders must work together to protect our people and our sovereign nations. As we reflect on this, NCAI reaffirms our role as the unifying voice of Indian Country. We will continue advocating for stronger partnerships and pushing back against attempts to weaken the constitutional and legal foundation that protects our inherent rights and our sovereignty. As part of these efforts, NCAI recently convened a coalition of national tribal organizations calling on the administration to ensure that recent executive actions do not undermine the sovereign status, the unique sovereign status of tribal nations, or to disrupt the federal funding that flows from honoring those treaty and trust responsibilities. Now, this week's session here is part of that work. We will spend these days preparing for important meetings on Capitol Hill. So it's vital now more than ever that you make your voices heard. This is a call to action and a key to one of the ways that you can help. Some of our congressional allies have already sounded that alarm that tribal nations are not subject to these executive orders and funding freezes. Many more will help, but they need to hear our voice and they need to be reminded. We want to work together with this administration where we can on shared priorities. These include reducing unnecessary regulations, streamlining federal funding mechanisms for critical tribal priorities and economic development, strengthening tribal self-determination, and addressing long-standing tax issues that are historic impediments to tribal economic growth. As we face these federal challenges, one thing remains clear. Strong leadership within Indian Country and across intertribal organizations is essential. As federal policies continue to evolve, tribal leaders must take our rightful place at the table. Discussions about infrastructure, economic development, education, and justice, and so many more. But we're going to need to focus and prioritize. Together, we can strengthen the sovereign rights of tribal nations and create lasting change for generations to come. That's kind of why we're here. That's kind of how we got here. So one of the most urgent areas of concern for Indian Country remains healthcare. By nearly every measure, life expectancy, rates of chronic disease, behavioral health challenges, Native communities face significant health disparities. Delays in federal health funding or reductions in support directly threaten the lives of our people and jeopardize access to hospitals, clinics, mental health resources, and public health programs. Indian Country demonstrated extraordinary resilience and unity during the COVID pandemic. We have something to go by. We work hand in hand with our federal partners to protect our people. Remember, healthcare for Native peoples is not a policy preference or an entitlement program, but it's a fundamental part of the federal trust responsibility. The federal government's obligation to provide healthcare to tribal nations is deeply rooted in treaties, the U.S. Constitution, and in federal law. But this trust responsibility remains far from being fully realized. So we call on Congress and the administration to make mandatory the funding of Indian healthcare programs and elevate the Indian Health Service Director to the level of Assistant Secretary to increase to increase visibility and advocacy within the federal system. Health parity also requires expanded access to culturally informed behavioral health services. Too many of our people carry devastating impacts from historic trauma, addiction, and mental health crises without the necessary support. We must see increased funding and workforce development for behavioral health programs in Indian Country. And we continue to push for expansion of self-governance programs at HHS, right? This would enable tribes to take greater control over healthcare programs within the Department of Health and Human Services. Self-governance is key to ensuring our healthcare systems meet the specific needs of our citizens without unnecessary federal oversight. Public health infrastructure is another urgent priority. We need continued investment in health facilities, data systems, training programs, all to ensure that tribal health departments are equipped to protect and care for their communities. In urban Native communities, we call on Congress to pass the Urban Indian Health Parity Act. This bill from Representatives Raul Ruiz and Don Bacon would make an important full federal reimbursement at urban Indian organizations permanent. These organizations serve over 70% of American Indian health. These organizations serve over 70% of American Indian and Alaska Native people who live in urban areas and provide critical health care services to those on Medicaid. But they've never received the same federal funding support as IHS and tribal health facilities, which has meant that states have had to bear additional costs. We can't leave this to the states. So this bill will level the playing field between IHS, tribal health facilities, and urban Indian organizations. So we applaud Representatives Ruiz and Bacon, as well as the National Council of Urban Indian Health, for their bipartisan leadership on this issue. All these healthcare priorities will strengthen sovereignty and the government-to-government relationships. It will expand self-governance and invest in behavioral health and public health infrastructure, all in the name of closing healthcare disparities and gaps and ensuring that all Native people receive the care that they deserve. Our treaties and trust obligations demand nothing less. So, health is foundational to our survival, but so is education. Our schools and our students continue to face systemic inequities, including chronic underfunding and policy changes that threaten culturally relevant curricula. Tribal colleges and universities have demonstrated incredible resilience, and they have faced deep cuts that are expected to increase. These schools have been forced to reduce services that not only help students succeed, but also create economic development and cultural preservation in Indian Country. This is unacceptable. We must protect and expand funding for TCUs. Yep, absolutely we do. So, Native education is also under threat from federal policies that promote school choice. While these policies may create opportunity for tribally controlled schools to take access to new funding, they also risk taking funds away from public schools that serve Native students. The new administration has issued directives designed to redirect funding, federal funds, toward private and charter schools. This could deprive already underfunded Bureau of Indian Education and tribally controlled schools of desperately needed support. Any of these school choice initiatives must respect tribal sovereignty. They must prevent the misclassification of Native education programs under generic racial equity frameworks, and it must guarantee that federal Indian education remains secure. And when they're in school, our students, and all students really, must learn about our history, culture, and contributions to this country. Teaching Native history is not a political act. It is a responsibility that we owe to all future generations.
That is NCAI President Mark Macaro speaking earlier today from Washington, D.C. at the annual State of Indian Nations. And let's get some feedback now. Let's get some input. And to do that, we have a guest joining us today from Duluth, Minnesota. His name is Tad Johnson. He is Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and he's also an attorney, and he is a member of the Boyce Fort Band of Chippewa. Tad, hello, and welcome back to the show. It's great to have you.
Hey, Sean, great to be here.
Well, What are your initial thoughts? Is there a main theme that you're hearing from President Macaro today?
Well, I think the underlying themes are constant in Indian country. It's kind of the ongoing trust responsibility that the federal government owes to tribes based on treaties and statutes and regulations, and also the inherent tribal sovereignty of the tribes. And those were two underlying ideas, but the last part that you played there dealt with healthcare and education and how, you know, changes in policy and funding would impact the young people. And it was a beautiful start to the day where those two young ladies came out and spoke very strongly about sovereignty and the trust responsibility. And so President Macaro threw in a lot of issues and details, but still the underlying ideas are still tribal sovereignty and the federal trust responsibility and maintaining those both in a wise and diplomatic way with this new administration.
Ted, we heard President Macaro, the first few minutes of his address, talked a lot about the previous administration. He gave a lot of credit to Deb Haaland and Department of Interior and just some of their accomplishments. And then he pivoted, and then, you know, obviously we're in a new presidential administration now. A lot has changed just over the last month. Do you think he adequately addressed the challenges that tribes are facing in the immediate future?
Yeah, I think Mark Macaro, as he noted, and I forgot how long he's been around. He's been a chairman for 30 years and certainly knows his stuff. Secretary Haaland, of course, was a historic appointment, being the first Native American in charge of the U.S. Department of the Interior, and he was noting a lot of her accomplishments, ranging from sacred sites, protecting sacred lands, enhancing self-governance and the trust responsibility in various ways. And he especially focused on the apology, on the boarding school issues. And that was an important statement by that president and that administration, and certainly made history by doing that. But there were a lot of other, besides Secretary Haaland, who of course will go down in history, there were other folks working in the Biden administration, whether it was in economic development or the Department of Agriculture or the Department of Health and Human Services, that made differences in Indian country. But those trust responsibilities, as the President Macaro pointed out, are ongoing. And, you know, this discussion of the letter from the new chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, Murkowski, and pointing out the status of Indian people as not being a racial classification, but a political classification, and having this unique relationship with the United States permeated the speech and drives home some of the main points that most tribal leaders want to make, I think.
Do you feel there were any elements missing from President Macaro's address, pressing issues not raised or concerns maybe you're hearing from other tribal leaders that he didn't voice?
No, I think he's a very, very smart guy, very articulate, and spoke to kind of the big panoply of issues that are facing Indian country today. What I was really struck by, and I don't know if you're going to play this later, was the story of his ancestor who was born in 1802 and lived into the 20th century, and all that she went through, and remembering all that Native Americans have been through throughout American history, so many policy shifts and so many changes, but the willingness of tribes to stay strong and be articulate. And he mentioned, you know, being able to sit at the table as policy is being made. And there's an old saying, you're either at the table or you're on the menu. And so he was out there trying to encourage the tribal leaders this week to go out and talk with congressional leaders to let them know that we're still here. There's still this unusual relationship between the United States and tribes, which will remain intact and continue into American history as we go forward.
Ted, thank you. Interesting day here at Native America Calling. We have had a chance to listen to NCAI President Mark Macaro. Every year, the president of NCAI delivers the State of Indian Nations Address. And this year's address took place today in Washington, D.C. And we've got Tad Johnson on the line, who is helping us understand the significance of this address and also to underscore some of the key talking points that were made today with regard to perhaps the exemption from the DEI classifications that there are efforts to diminish, and how tribes are exempt. That is a DOI affirmed order. Also talking about how Native American tribes represent a political identity, not a racial class, for legal purposes, which is a very important distinction as well to understand with regard to the whole DEI discussion. So we're going to continue our show here. We're going to hear from another speech that was given today in Washington, D.C., but we do have to take a short break. We're going to come back. We're going to listen to that other speech. We're going to talk more with Tad Johnson, and hopefully we'll take some calls as well. So if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we'll be right back, so stay with us. We've got a lot more to cover here on Native America Calling today.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com. DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at DT-Track.com, who support this show. The Alaska Native Art Auction Gala is March 21st, 2025 in Anchorage, Alaska. Please consider donating art and help Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation raise needed funds. Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation's mission is to be the leader in bringing Native voices to Alaska and the nation. With your support, we're able to produce such programs as National Native News, Native America Calling, and more. Donor forms and more information about the auction can be found at knba.org. Anyone who donates art before February 14th will be automatically entered into a drawing to win $500. Did you know that one person can save up to 8 lives and heal dozens more through the gift of organ and tissue donation? Give hope to thousands of people across the U.S. waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. Learn more about the power of organ, eye, and tissue donation with Life Center Northwest, the organ procurement organization serving all of Alaska, at lcnw.org. That's lcnw.org.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org. Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org.
We're glad you're with us today on Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We are devoting the show to the annual State of Indian Nations address from the National Congress of American Indians. President Mark Macaro's address just wrapped up. He expressed the importance for tribal leaders to speak up at this moment in history to assure that their interests in terms of health care, education, justice, and economic development are represented. Let's now hear Minnesota Representative Betty McCollum with the congressional response to the State of Indian Nations address. She begins by talking about the White House memo that called for a federal funding freeze. The freeze was rescinded, but she says that there are repercussions from that action. She also talks about the dangers of the Trump administration rolling back diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives.
So I want you to know that I've had conversations with some of my colleagues in a bipartisan fashion, and they say that they're alerted and they're woken up to the problem that might be existing when it comes to fully implementing sovereignty. So what did the memo mean is the big question. The memo was pulled back, but some of the funding still is being locked up and not moving forward. So I need to hear when that's happening. Tom Cole needs to hear when that's happening. Mike Simpson needs to hear when that's happening. We need, Cherise Davis needs to hear when that's happening. You need to communicate us in real time because we are committed on trying to solve these problems as they start popping up. The memo, when it deals with DEI, what does that mean? We have been told by the administration it means one thing. I want to see the proof that Indian country really is not included in that. Your funding is interspersed throughout all the agencies. Think about how you work with the Department of Agriculture, whether it's in, you know, First Foods. Think about how you work with the Department of Agriculture when it comes to applying for internet connectivity. Those are grants that are just kind of swept up. And in some of the grants, you're included in with them, but they also might say DEI in there for other communities that are falling behind. We need to make sure that the language that was spoken by this White House is the actions that are carried out. And then there's the Department of Health. What happens with the special diabetes programs and other parts of research that are being done in the NIH to make sure that when drug studies are done, they are culturally appropriate and they are also culturally inclusive. DEI members of the Department of Research in the NIH have been fired. So there is work to do, and I need your help doing it. You think of the EPA and the cuts and the talk about eliminating the EPA and how instrumental the EPA is in making sure that we live up to our obligations, and I'm talking about the federal government, when it comes to polluted waters and polluted lands. We need the EPA to be there, to be at your assistance in making sure we do the cleanup right. So here's what I'm going to say in closing. I need to know that what DEI means and all the other agencies and all the other grants that are out there. If we are being serious about respecting your sovereignty, honoring our trust and treaty obligations, that cannot get caught up in minutiae and saying, oh, well, we'll fix that later. It needs to be fixed before anything more happens. The funding that you need to provide your programs needs to be delivered on time and responsibly. And then when we come to do the appropriation bills in the future, we need to work together side by side, hand by hand with you. Not with me suggesting things, with you suggesting to me in a bipartisan fashion that we have done with Chairman Cole and Chairman Simpson and so many others who are part of the Native American Caucus. As Mark said, Lisa Murkowski can't do this alone. We can't do this alone in Congress. We are only an instrument that's as good as the tool makers. You are the people creating the instruments that we use, helping us understand what they need to look like in order to serve your communities.
That was an excerpt from Minnesota Representative Betty McCollum at NCAI's State of Indian Nations address. And let's go back now to Tad Johnson, who joins us from Duluth, Minnesota, where he is professor emeritus at the University of Minnesota Duluth and also an attorney. And Tad, we just heard Betty McCollum urge for greater communication between NCAI and tribes with members of Congress. What do you think? Are you seeing greater communication between tribes and Congress than in previous years?
Well, it's that time of year where NCAI gets people together and gets them to, I'm certain a lot of them were inspired by the words of President McCollum, but also inspired by Betty McCollum to go and talk to their congressmen and women and their U.S. senators about the state of their tribes on their own. Betty McCollum, of course, fellow Minnesotan and someone who I've gotten to know as a tribal attorney over the years for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, highly effective legislator on behalf of Native nations, and at one point was the head of the Native American Caucus, which she co-chaired with Tom Cole. So it was a Democrat and a Republican chairing that caucus, and they've always been somewhat nonpartisan when it comes to Indian affairs. And they've she is a mover and shaker, and as she noted, though, you do have to spread the word. I've found in over doing this, I used to work on Capitol Hill and then the Clinton administration, you have to re-educate a Congress, and when a new administration comes in, you have to kind of educate them on the unique status of Indian tribes in American law. We have this unique status of under the Constitution, articulated by Chief Justice John Marshall and carried on all these years. And we need to explain all that. I think Mark Macaro was indicating that in his address, and also very strongly indicated that by Congresswoman McCollum, that, you know, even if you have to start with congressmen and women at square one, explaining what tribal sovereignty is, what the federal trust responsibility is, and how that trust responsibility flows not just for the Department of Interior and the Department of Health and Human Services through IHS, but through every department, education, HUD, et cetera, agriculture, down through the different departments. And we do, one thing I do here in Minnesota is Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan got a law through that there has to be consultation between all the tribes in Minnesota and all the state agencies and all the state employees that are working with tribes. I have to take a training, which I teach, where we go through the different eras of federal Indian policy. And most people walk away saying, I never heard about this in school. And most of them didn't, because it's not offered in school. And during his speech, President Macaro was talking about educating not only our Indian kids about our history, but also educating kids in school. But at this moment right now, is it time to go out and educate Congress and the administration on this unique history, the unique status of Indian people. And as Congresswoman McCollum was saying, get them to understand sovereignty. And underlined in Mark McCarroll's speech was getting them to fully understand the trust responsibility.
Ted, let's also talk about DEI and Representative McCollum. She came down really hard on this and demanding really a definition of what it means. What does DEI mean? And also, are we really exempt? Are Native Americans, are we really exempt from these DEI rollbacks? That was a big question she posed. And I want to ask you, I mean, how solid is this order that Native nations are exempt? Will that be legally binding in the months to come, or will there be major challenges towards that? What's your thought?
Well, I don't know if there's going to be challenges, but Betty McCollum understands the unique relationship between the tribes and the United States, it's been the law so long, and there are definitely people at the Department of Interior and the department, other departments, that fully understand that special relationship between the United States and the tribes. And at the University of Minnesota, even we've kind of, there's like at University of Minnesota Duluth, there's the American Indian Learning and Resource Center, and they're different from the other groups that have spaces for talking about their issues of their groups, and so. It is something that is fundamental in federal law that Indian tribes have this unique status, going back to Chief Justice Marshall and then all the way through to the 1974 case of Morton versus Mancari, that being an Indian is not a racial classification, it's a political classification. And so when it comes to DEI programs, Indians are in their own constitutional class, and that is just something that has to be driven home and explained and understood by Congress and the administration. And so I think the call that came out from President McCarroll and Betty McCollum were, go out and explain that. And it's not just going to be Tom Cole and Betty McCollum and others that are explaining it around. It has to be all the tribes going out and educating all the members of Congress, the House and the Senate.
Thanks, Ted. We have time for one caller today, and this person joins us now from Kotzebue, Alaska. He's on the line. Hello, thanks for calling in today. What's your comment?
My comment is we're having problems with alcohol in Alaska. Our town is getting hurt by medevac to Anchorage, Alaska for alcohol, drugs, and booze. And too much alcohol is sold in Alaska. We need some help to stop this alcohol that's been hurting our people. Many of our people in Alaska have no way of speaking to anybody or any legislators to stop this drinking. And lots of the people in Alaska have no voice. But we need to stop this depression of this alcohol been causing so much death and so much accidents, and mostly.
Sir, thank you for calling in. Really appreciate you joining us from Kotzebue, Alaska. And Ted, the caller mentions the need for more alcohol and substance abuse prevention resources and programs. And we heard President Macaro talk about the importance of good quality health care, not just through the Indian Health Service, but also in the form of tribally run facilities and also urban clinics as well. Going forward, what's your thought? Are we going to be able to ensure that we have good quality health care available in our communities?
Well, it always seems like Indian Health Service is underfunded, one of the things you can do under the Tribal Self-Governance Act and Indian Health Service is you get your money in a block grant, and if a tribe wants to prioritize, different ways of getting people off of drugs and alcohol, a tribe can make that a priority and do it in their own traditional way. But all of that takes funding, and all of that will take constant tribal lobbying, the appropriations committees, to ensure that IHS is funded well, and those programs for all of healthcare matters, and especially, and this gentleman was pointing out the problem of alcohol in Alaska, and driving home all those healthcare needs, whether it's diabetes or getting sober or getting kidney failure folks what they need on reservations. There's so many needs out there. It's just, you have to be, tribes have to be constantly lobbying and making their voices heard, as was said in the speech. So the only cure for that is to get Congress's attention and get them to fund the needs of health care on reservations in Alaska Native villages.
All right, we're going to have to wrap up this conversation today here on Native America Calling. We're out of time. But big thanks to our guest, Tad Johnson, for his insights and his analysis of the state of Indian Nations. And with that, we're going to be back tomorrow. We'll talk with the inspiring Native artists who were recently recognized by the First People's Fund. Hope you'll tune in. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day. I'm Sean Spruce.
MFA programs at the Institute of American Indian Arts, IAIA, honor your voice and vision. IAIA is a tribal university whose low residency programs empower artists, writers, and community leaders through innovation and indigenous-centered education. Whether your path is creative writing, studio arts, or cultural administration, IAIA fosters respect, dialogue, and community. Applications accepted through February 15th at iaia.edu, who support this show.
Support by the American Indian College Fund. The American Indian College Fund provides millions of dollars of scholarships to thousands of Native students every year. Tribal citizens of every age and experience are eligible. The deadline for applications is May 31st, and you can find everything you need to apply at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org, or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Education is the answer.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
Ain't no hold.
mom gave me a nickel to buy a pickle. Well, I didn't buy a pickle, I bought some chewing gum. Chew, 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 chewing gum. How I love chewing gum. Well, I'm crazy over chewing gum. I chew, chew, chew. My aunt gave me a quarter for soda water. Well, I didn't buy no water, I bought some chewing gum. Chew, 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 chewing gum. How I love chewing gum. Well, I'm crazy over chewing gum. What can I...